I got glow sticks, pacifiers, Vicks VapoRub. Let's roll.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, our guest is monster expert Matt Kessen. He talks to us about the evolutionary psychology of God and answers our five questions.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Hi, welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Nick Glover, joined as always by my co-hosts, Molly Glover.
Hello.
And Tim Wick.
I am unironic.
And today, our guest for this episode is Matt Kessen.
Who remained silent through all of that. Hi,
yay,
I'm Matt.
Yay, Matt.
Thank you.
You might know Matt from Reverend Matt's Monster Science or from...
A number of theatrical productions.
Yeah,
he opened for Ville in the June show.
Yep, the fairy tale show, and you're regularly active in the Twin Cities Fringe, which just happened after this episode goes up, or will happen soon if you're a Patreon supporter and listening to this early.
Ooh,
fancy.
And Matt, you want to talk about how God is a matter of evolutionary psychology, or like the need for God.
Yes, I would like to talk about that. well, where to begin? First of all, I'd like to say something about the phrase evolutionary psychology. There are a lot of people who are very against evolutionary psychology, who hate evolutionary psychology. To the best of my understanding, this hatred is generally based on the idea that, like, say, evolutionary psychology will talk about the evolutionary advantage of slavery, for example, and it will say that it is evolutionary, and it will say that it is evolutionarily advantageous. And this, of course, you know, it gets people angry, and understandably so. But I'm still a fan of evolutionary psychology because, to my mind, you can explain why slavery is advantageous to, you know, to survival and breeding without signing off on it. I mean, it's like a different activity than assigning ethics and morals to stuff. Something can be advantageous evolutionarily and be morally completely reprehensible.
Frequently.
Right. And so in particular, like when you're discussing the evolutionary, and which is relevant to what we're saying about the evolutionary psychology of God, because in looking for the evolutionary psychology of God, you're looking for why it is advantageous to have God and religion. And this, of course, is an atheist podcast.
Right.
So
we try.
So yeah. So it's kind of. I mean, it's not quite as severe a topic as slavery, but it's the same sort of thing where we're explaining through evolutionary advantage something that we at this table don't care for.
Well, but it also explains. It can help to explain why it doesn't make sense for there to be a God that exists, given that the creation of God is an evolutionary advantage.
Well, right.
But that means that it is a creation of God, not God creating.
Yeah. Certainly believers are going to be even more unhappy with the evolutionary psychology of God than anyone else might.
Yeah. No doubt.
Because it reduces their idea to an idea. Mm-hmm. And to worse than an idea, to something that is just... Well, we'll get into spoiler alert to something that is a byproduct of the structure of the brain.
Right.
So, we've joked about and heard religious texts, especially any of the like Abrahamic religions. Mm-hmm. Their books referred to as medieval survival guides.
Sure.
And so I don't think this is necessarily like an evolutionary psychology thing, but having a strict set of rules and guidelines to keep your people alive and having them adhere to those rules as a matter of religious strictness is beneficial.
Well, right. But what we're looking for as far as the evolutionary psychology of God is concerned is the God part. I mean, you have... rules, sure, yeah. Society, structure, culture, all of these sorts of things. These are essential to humanity. Everything else that is an evolutionary. What I don't know. Maybe people have moved on from this. But what I've always learned about humans as an animal is that our evolutionary advantage is culture. Uh-huh. Everything else, intelligence, hands, everything else is just in service to culture. That's the thing that we have that gets us ahead. Without culture, yeah, individually without culture, we are out of luck. No, we are completely incapable of survival without culture. And everything else.
Laws come from. That's where everything comes from.
That's where everything comes from, and it's the only thing we have that keeps us alive. But what we want, but what I'm curious to look at is not culture, but God specifically. Why the culture has to have invisible superheroes from outer space?
What is the benefit?
Well,
or a benefit?
I don't know. Thank you for having me on your podcast.
Matt Kasson, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, no, and of course there isn't any simple answer to this, but there's no simple answer to this. There's a lot of different angles. There's a lot of different people saying a lot of different things. Most of the more interesting ones, at least as far as I'm concerned, are ones that where God is what's called a spandrel, which is to say, you know what a spandrel is? Who knows what a spandrel is?
Yeah, it's a little dog. It's really
a spandrel. A spandrel is a concept in evolution. It was come up with by Stephen Jay Gould, famous scientist. Mm-hmm. A spandrel is something that is a feature of a living thing that is incidental to some other evolutionary thing that has no actual advantage unto itself, but that rather is a byproduct of something else. And sometimes this is insanely random. Like there was that thing where they decided to domesticate some foxes. I don't know if you've heard about this thing.
Yeah.
They decided to domesticate some foxes, and so they started selectively breeding them for, you know, agreeableness. And and their ears flop down like a beagle's ears.
Huh.
And they didn't want this, and it had nothing to do with anything, and it provided no advantage, but in breeding them for domesticity, their ears flop down. And this is a spandrel. This is completely pointless evolutionarily. And there's a bunch of stuff like that. This is a thing.
And a spandrel can be correlative, not just causative. Like it could be another trait that hopped along with the traits you're trying to get.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Or it could be. I suppose it could be genetically related to the like maybe some gene that changes your behavior also makes you more prone to one other thing.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah.
Well, the ears had nothing to do with domesticity. So, but yet there they were. But the point is that you evolve something and then something else comes with it one way or the other that is not advantageous, but that just sort of comes with it. And that isn't harmful and either. And, you know, that can be debated as far as the belief in God is concerned, but thus sticks around.
Sure.
So there's an idea that there's a lot of ways that the brain is built that are entirely, you know, evolutionarily positive, but that sort of encourage supernatural belief as a side effect.
Sure.
And a lot of this is just how things are envisioned. There's a thing called theory of mind, which was an idea that was it was first phrased. This is not the theory that minds exist. This is actually the theory of mind refers to the part of originally referred to the part of the development of an infant when they the development of an infant's brain when they decided they understood that other things in their environment had their own brains. So you get your theory of mind when you're like, I don't know, 2 years old, even when you're very, very young. Not when you're born, but when you're very, very young. You develop theory of mind when you start to understand that stuff that you're looking at has its own brains. And this started off as an infant development thing and has since become an animal intelligence thing. People started to debate what animals actually possess theory of mind.
Sure.
And
is it just related to domesticity or is it in the wild as well? Because it would make total sense if an animal we domesticated starts to share a similar presence of mind that we have because we're training them and that's where they're learning. But if it's also in the wild, that's fucking incredible.
Well, it's a whole wiring of the brain. brain thing. Mm-hmm. And like one of the most, it's very, animal intelligence is a pain because you have these arch conservatives.
Tell me about it.
You have this arch conservative level of people who think that all animals are binary computers, and then you have people who think that, you know, worms are sapient, and
right.
and obviously it's somewhere in between, but there's just so much pull in both directions. But like one of the big theory of mind things was, thanks for coming to your podcast. I'm just sure. going on and on and on.
This We're good.
No. We are
most
like
of
in
our
love
podcasts,
with this.
We talk like motherfuckers.
Yeah, this is so great. Yeah. This is so great. I'm loving this.
But
yeah.
No, one of the best theory of mine was actually crows. Which of course are not domesticated, and I could explain it, but they have real solid theory.
They can solve puzzles. We've seen
Well, no, like I'm just going
to
say
they recognize people.
Isn't whether or not they can solve puzzles. What you're trying to prove is whether or not they look at another crow and go, that creature can solve puzzles.
And it's unbelievably difficult to demonstrate that.
Right. Sure. How do you test for that?
For the crows, I'll do this as quickly as I can because it is certainly a segue. But for the crows, there were some crows. They did this test. Crows cache food for the winter. They find trees and they put away food. Some crows steal from other crows' caches. Only some. Hmm. Some of them are thieves and some of them aren't.
Kind of like humans.
Yes, they would. And in this study, they observed that sometimes a crow would cache its food, and another crow would be watching it. and then the crow doing the caching of the food would do one of two things: either go about its life as though nothing had happened, or once the other crow was gone, move its cache. And here's the thing. So this is all good, but it's not good enough. This could all still be instinct.
Yeah.
The thing is, the crows that moved their caches rather than left them be were the ones that were themselves thieves.
Oh, wow.
You see what I'm saying?
They knew
that this idea existed.
That's
a big, big deal.
That makes me wonder if they noticed. So here's another thought. Is it just, I mean, you may not know this, but I wonder if it's just crows they recognize as being potential thieves, or if other animals... If they, you know
that's
what I mean? Like,
that is actually a super good question.
Do they see squirrels? And they're like, one time a squirrel stole from me, you know? Like, I mean,
crows.
Yeah. Well, and that's a super good question and incredibly relevant to the God question. But yeah. Anyway, go on.
Crows recognize people in their neighborhood and, like, they
the
know, like,
that feed them
that's
and...
the guy that puts out food, or, like, that's the guy that always leaves for work on
that's
Monday.
The one with
like,
the broom who came
like,
after me.
Crows
like,
recognize people as
that's crazy.
As individuals with attributes and stuff.
I, for one, welcome our new crow overlords.
Croverlords.
Croverlords.
All I'm thinking is there is no honor among crow thieves.
But the point is that humans, of course, you know, there is obviously no question that humans possess theory of mind. They just don't have it when they're born. They just have to get it later on.
Yeah.
And the thing is, humans are kind of runaway with theory of mind. We yell at our computers.
Sure.
I yelled at my sock the other day. You know?
Dude, I was yelling at the washing machine when Tim was over.
Cars.
Yeah you were.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah.
If pressed, we don't actually believe that these things are responding to our yelling or anything like
that. Oh, maybe not.
But the point is, this is the theory of mind being a thing that we have and that most animals don't, it's a question of where does it end, which is relevant to what you were saying about squirrels. Do the crows recognize non-crow things?
Those fuckers will steal
also
things.
Having mind. And we recognize, and we not only recognize non-human things as not having minds, but we recognize things that demonstrably do not have minds.
Absolutely.
So
does that lead into the God question?
Well, I mean,
seeing a mind in the world or in the universe or in
you apply theory of mind to just
it sky. Can't be thunder. It's got to be God bowling. Like when
isn't,
I'm a kid
I
and
mean,
my mom is.
I suppose some of it is our predisposition for confirmation bias too, isn't it?
Well, of course, yeah.
The fact that I don't know what causes this, and somebody says, "Well, clearly Zeus, god of thunder, causes thunder."
Well, sure, but you need to get. I don't know. It's more interesting the farther in you get than that, because why the brain insists on this. There's the question of causation. The question of causation, I think, is a big one. You don't need. I mean. An animal brain doesn't need causation. A cow doesn't need to know one thing or the other. One of the things that about how the human brain is wired is about causation. We like stories. We like We like to know that we like teleology. We like the idea of things being for things. And this is not, this does not appear to be cultural. I mean, the, just the idea that, you know, you can ask a tiny child, what are trees for? What are rocks for? And they're going to make some shit up because, because things are for things. And that's obviously untrue. I mean, the world is, the universe, you know, boils itself up from chance as far as I'm concerned, but so things are not for things, but we want it to be. And the reason I think, and of course other reasons are given, I don't know any of them because I've just remembered the one that I like, but the reason I think that we're so focused on teleology is as sort of a byproduct, a spandrel of being the robust tool makers that we are. We look at the world and we want it to be for things as a byproduct of the fact that we can make things that are in fact for things. Just the idea, again, much as theory of mind just ramps itself up a little too far and you start seeing minds where there aren't. The thing in your brain that lets you have things be for things, which is what tool use is based on, just goes a little out of control, and everything's for something. And if everything's for something, then it has to be for, then the purpose of things that are not directly helping us, I want your listeners to know that I'm just gesticulating wildly while I say this.
I'm surprised you can't hear the wind of his hands flying past the microphone.
But yeah, it is essential. It is unbelievably important to the human brain that we are able to conceive of the idea of purposes for things, because that's what tool use is. If you have teleology, I'm sorry.
No.
If you have teleology and it just runs a little bit rampant, then things that are not plainly for you have to be for somebody.
Sure.
What's the purpose? It's human brains are like wired for pattern recognition. That's a huge evolutionary advantage. Recognizing beyond just recognizing like plants and animals that are dangerous or safe and that sort of thing. I've heard people that are toy with evolutionary psychology talk about how the fact that our brains are so wired for pattern recognition is actually a contributing problem to prejudice things like that. And it's our own brains kind of fighting against our more logical, mindful selves.
Yeah.
I think that seeing purpose in things, that tool use thing with the pattern recognition parts of our brain, I mean, it's hand in hand.
Well, that's just it.
You create a pattern where there isn't none because your brain is wired to do that.
Yeah.
And then if there's a pattern, your brain is also wired to perceive that as evidence of intelligence.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the natural conclusion is, well, where is that intelligence? I don't see it.
Right.
It must be God.
Well, on top of that, if you look at, you know, we're trying to figure out what you know, our purpose is. Humans, when we look at ourselves, there is nothing like us. If you look at a cat, there's other things like cats. If you look at a cow, there's other things like cows. You know, you can, so that pattern recognition might be working against us in that sense too, because it's like, well, why are we different? We must be different for a reason. There must be some purpose to this. So then like you start to get all in yourself about like, well, then we must have been that whole we're made in God's image kind of a thing, and like where's the other thing like us? Oh, it must be God, it must be like this big amazing thing.
If there's a purpose, yeah, then
yeah.
And that's the thing is that and I think even meaning, which is this grand big thing that religion and philosophy and all that, and that is real. You know, we want meaning for things, whether you assign that to an external source, which most people have done throughout history, or
unfortunate symptom of the human condition.
Yeah, but why?
Yeah.
That's the interesting part.
Yeah.
From where I'm standing, and I think again we're dealing with sort of an overgrown byproduct of not purpose this time, but just etiology, just a cause and effect. Because humans, it's another thing that we have to be good at is cause and effect, because that's how you plan for the future. That's how you understand about the future is to know about causes and know about effects.
Which is also pattern recognition in that sense of knowing that, like, if I use a spear that's this long, I ended up getting trampled. You know, so like I need to use a spear that's this long, and then I can stay away from the feet, just let me know all the way. That's the simplest,
right? And so if you have that much need for cause and effect, if you have that much need for narrative for you know, this thing happens and therefore this thing happens, therefore this thing happens. You start working backwards and you stop having answers, you know.
Sure.
Then you make some shit up. Because everything has to have a cause.
Of course.
And if you don't see that cause,
if it doesn't, where did the effect come from?
Then you invent it. But then cause and effect, but even just cause and effect, I don't know. What I dig about this is to bring it all the way back to cause and effect being a mechanism of preparing for the future. That's what cause and effect is for. All sorts of, you know, wolves and stuff, they have all sorts of animals behave in ways that we would take as cause and effect, but that take as an understanding of cause and effect, but they aren't really, you know, they have a series of instincts or things that they've been taught, but even the teaching is not fluid. It's a set sort of, you know, here's how you hunt for deer and all that sort of thing, and it's the same for
instincts and stimulus response.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, and you run away from, you know, you're a zebra and you run away from the lions because the lion will kill you, but you're not thinking that through. You see a lion, you run away.
Right.
There's no cause and effect. And so that's the thing that we developed. Where it gets weirder and stickier is just in terms of and there's a bunch of other stuff, but one thing I'd like to touch on is that where it gets weirder and stickier for me is just in terms of awe. Because when you start talking about the evolutionary psychology of God, you have to look at a thing that Goodall observed, which was that, you know, she you know, observed the shit out of her troops of chimpanzees, and one of the things that they would do was that they would singly or in small groups, not the whole group at once, I don't think ever, maybe, I don't know, but they'd go to a waterfall in their area. And they would do their display behavior, their hooting and making noise, directed at the waterfall. And even the most conservative animal intelligence people, even the people who think that you know, all animals are binary computers, aren't going to tell you that the chimpanzees were mistaking the waterfall for another chimpanzee, which is otherwise the only thing that they do is display. They don't do the display behavior to humans. They don't do it to they do it to each other, and they do it to the waterfall. And Goodall took this as awe. Goodall took this as,
it's so crazy and big and powerful and
and
it hacks their noise and ape brain.
I don't know what that thing is, but I'm going to show it how good I am.
Yeah, exactly.
Fuck that thing. I'm the best monkey here. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
And so that is fascinating. And I don't know of a of an evolutionary advantage to that.
100 years from now, chimps are going to be like dragging other chimps to the waterfall and like cutting their throats in front of it. And make a display at the waterfall. Or
and then of course you have the Neanderthals burying their dead with flowers and arranging the skulls of cave bears in their caves in what is plainly, I mean, what is either an artistic or a ritualistic way, but not cast aside, but rather arranged specifically. And
decorated.
And so it's very, very old, whatever it is, the religious feeling.
Look for cave bear skull decorations at your IKEA.
There's a lot of people talk about how
you can put them together in 5 easy steps.
One of the benefits of religion, or one of the reasons religion may have come about, is the human condition and the anxiety of death. At some point you become smart enough to realize that you are alive and that you won't be, because you see everything around you die in the circle of life. So, I mean, it can be beneficial to not worry about death as much in some ways.
Because you can get on with it. You can get on with the raising of your family and the helping your tribe and the,
If you're too worried about death, you'll never live. You'll never succeed. You'll never,
You can,
I thought you meant get on with death.
No, you can get on with it.
Get on with death.
You're not frozen in place. You're not afraid to go hunt because you might die.
Right.
If you know that your God will carry you on to whatever afterlife is waiting for you. And it's even the church by our house that we have to drive by, not the gigantic shitty mega church, but the one that actually has a sign with little, like, you know, sayings or whatever. The one they've had up for the longest time has been, the pain you feel now cannot compare to the joy that's coming.
Aww.
Which is such the, like, the fucking con of of religion is like, I know everything sucks right now, but don't worry, it's gonna get better as long as you believe in our thing.
I'll gladly pay pay you Tuesday for a hamburger today.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Well, and again, if you look at, and again, looking, you know, when you look at evolutionary advantage, you look at other animals and, you know, that don't have the same thing and what the difference is and what the advantage is. And the thing is, I don't know, whenever I look at, you know, at the nature documentaries and stuff, animals in the wild, I mean, even when they're laying down and stuff, seem like just coiled springs, you know, they're ready to go. They're ready to run or climb or whatever it is they have
to do. I don't know what you're talking about. That's how I looked yesterday, laying on my couch watching Buffy the Vampire Slayer eating Cheetos off my chest.
We don't, right.
I was coiled for action.
And everything with a brain in the world is capable of fear. And most things with a brain in the world spend most of their time in some level of fear.
Yeah.
And
our cats are afraid of shadows.
and how, you know, and so... It's, you know, I mean, it's gone south, but the basic idea of having something to quiet that down for you, it's certainly evolutionarily advantageous.
Because once people aren't just sitting around going, oh God, there's nothing,
fear's good for keeping you alive to a point.
Absolutely. If you're completely unafraid, you die young.
Right.
Like that is just, I mean, for real, because it means that when fire burns you, you keep going after it.
And that's why
and
animals...
the cars in the street, you just go right.
And that's why animals are afraid all the time. It's evolutionarily advantageous to be afraid all the time.
Yeah. Absolutely. Especially if you're a chihuahua.
But just something about, I think there's something about the sophistication of the society, of consciousness that makes it disagreeable to be afraid all the time.
Yeah.
It doesn't work for humans to be afraid all the time because we're thinking. And then death is, of course, it's a whole thing. The more sophisticated an animal is the worse it is for death. Well, no, I mean, you have the thing with... you have the thing where an elephant loses, where an elephant mother loses its child, and then sits there and stands there and tries to wake it up for 2 hours.
And elephants have a whole.
Not because it's dumb, but because it's sad.
Elephants have a whole thing where they with death. I mean, like there's a lot of animals that have rituals
and
obvious that it's not just us that can sense the pattern of passing being the end of something forever.
Absolutely.
And you know that I think is something that has, I always feel like when people are like, well, you know, I've got friends who are vegetarians and vegans. It's like, well, how do you differentiate between, you know, like they'll show a scale. It's like, here's a cat and here's a dog and now here's a chicken. And you know, where do you stop? Like, where do you stop and
it's
say, I don't eat these?
Right.
And it's super subjective. But I think a big part of it is, you know, the way we domesticated things, whether we domesticated them to be companions or we domesticated them to be food. And so maybe, sure, cows might play and maybe even be smart sometimes, but not the way that we have grown them at this point. And we have grown them to not be smart because the smart ones weren't as fun to easy to kill. And they made us sad when we killed them.
Right.
And
or so they get out.
Or they could get out or whatever. And so, whereas you don't want a dumb dog, like that's not good for a companion. You need someone to protect you and to help you hunt and to, you know, like, you know, who comes when you call it. And so there's all these different levels of things that we have affected those animals populations too much to be able for me to just say they're all the same,
right?
You know, at this point.
So let me see. What was I? I was thinking about this, you know, on the bus over. So there's. So you have your fear. You have your laying of fear. You have the mysterious awe, the legitimately mysterious concept of awe. But,
it's like a waterfall, man. What is that? Where'd that come from? How's it doing?
That seems to be a thing that we have. And what the advantage of that? I don't know of a good proposal for what the advantage of that is. You have tool use, which leads to the idea that things have purpose.
Mm-hmm.
You have
including us, and therefore, what's our purpose?
Right. Like, you have cause and effect to plan for the future, which leads to the idea that everything has a cause, and when you don't. And when you don't have cyclotrons, you don't know what those causes are going to be, and then you have theory of mind, in which case you other things in the environment have brains, and you just go a little too far with it.
Do you think is egotism like a part of theory of mind in the sense that I've always felt like part of why humans created a god in the sense is it is a sense of egotism that we are so special, something must have, you know, wanted us to have purpose.
I think there's on a purely psychological point of view. My own thinking, I'm sure there are a million other hypotheses, but
positive.
My own thinking is that the first thing a baby learns to recognize in its environment of everything, it's just a chaos of color at first.
Mm-hmm.
First thing is eyes. Mm-hmm. It will recognize somebody's eyes. Then it will recognize somebody's face, and then other shit will start to come, and then the rest of the body and other things in the environment. Mm-hmm.
And then its own hands, its own feet, exactly. that it can move them and touch them. And, right. Yeah.
But it'll respond to eyes. It'll yep, respond yep. to eyes and face first. And so my own thinking is that we're hardwired for the first thing we know about. The first and most important thing in the universe is a face.
Oh yeah, we look for faces on there's a whole subreddit that's faces on objects.
Chairs and chairs toast and,
yeah,
and
right. Yeah.
And that's just
we look for Jesus in everything.
And again, that's just psychology as a biological mm-hmm, imperative. Mm-hmm. The first thing you want to know is the eyes of your caretaker, because if it can, well,
and not just for caretaker, but also for enemies. If it can see you, if you can see its eyes, it can see you. Is the idea? So like, it makes sense in terms of, you know, being a prey or predator. You know that you would. Yeah. I imagine other animals have a similar thing that like if eyes flash, recognize. That they recognize. You know, they can see them in the dark and the light. Like it's
right. But you have to know what to respond to mm-hmm. because you are dependent.
Absolutely.
And if you're dependent, you have to know what you're dependent on. And the best way to do that is with the eyes. Apparently.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I think on a purely I'm sure you have, and we could ourselves go on and on about the ethical and moral and philosophical problems of humanocentrism, of the idea that humans are the most important thing in the universe. I can't stand that idea. I think it's a terrible, ludicrous idea. But on a purely evolutionary psychological level, the thing that imprints on your brain the most, whatever mm-hmm. culture you're born into, is the human face. Mm-hmm. And so you're gonna want that. You're gonna look for that. And you're going to create that where it is absent.
Do you think that the idea that humans are the most important thing in the universe is a modern idea or an ancient idea?
I don't know. Yeah, it's tricky. I mean, you have this sort of noble savage idea, which is problematic on a number of levels. But I mean, like, one thing that's true is when humanity went to Australia, mm-hmm. 30,000 or maybe 70,000 years ago, according to a recent thing, a long, long, long time ago. Enormous mass extinction in Australia.
Oh, yeah.
Immediately. All sorts of huge marsupials and stuff that we just killed right the fuck
it's
off.
It's coming right for us.
And, you know, and...
But I thought Aborigines lived with the land.
That's what I'm saying. That's the thing, is that we have to be super careful about that sort of... Because, that's the prevalent idea.
Yes,
and when you ask something about, is it a modern idea that we're better than everything else?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that there's... I don't know my Aborigine religion and whether there's an idea that everything is for us or whether there isn't. But even if there isn't, I can imagine that there might be a live in harmony with the land idea and yet still go and kill
Isn't there an evolutionary advantage to believing that we are the most... Because, you know...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
If you believe you are the most important species, then you don't have a problem going out and killing off all the biggest marsupials in Australia.
You have a biological... You have a... I mean,
it's like, you win.
Yeah.
And then
if you
add God into the mix, you create a God, then now you have a God-given imperative to exert your, you know, whatever is all over the land, which is in the Bible.
Yeah.
It's in the fucking Bible that, like, God has told you, you gotta, like, tame the beasts and tell the lands to be like...
I put this here for you to use.
Exactly, yeah.
Every social animal is going, you know, I mean, wolves like are going to be nicer to... I mean, they'll fight with other packs, that sort of thing, but they're going to be nicer to other wolves than they're going to be to coyotes or minks or...
Humans.
Or whatever. I mean, if you're a social animal, then your brain is wired to think of your own animal as the best animal, as the animal that needs that needs your support. So,
or at least the most familiar animal. You know, so I mean, it might be like some of that too. I don't know.
If your ultimate goal, evolutionarily speaking, is to make more of yourself, the way to make more of yourself, if you're a social animal, is to protect other animals like you. And humans are the same way. Our goal is to make more humans.
Well, and
therefore,
you use the word familiar, and familiar comes from family. I mean, it is from your family.
Right.
It is your same animal, you know. And so that makes it's a semantics thing that actually has its roots in what's even being said. So it's perfect.
I always wanted a black cat for a familiar. That was always
I always wanted a pseudo dragon because I'm
pseudo dragon.
Next time we write new five questions, what is your familiar?
When I was a kid, I had an imaginary flock flock of sheep that followed me everywhere. It was some my bitch. That was my imaginary friend.
Wow.
Was a large herd of fluffy white sheep that were my friends.
That's amazing.
And my mom actually played into it and would I'd be in my bedroom and mom would just yell for me and I'd come in and she'd be like, get these sheep out of my kitchen.
Wow.
And I wouldn't have thought they were in the kitchen, but apparently she made, yeah, you'd think, but then you get then you grow up like me and you're like, oh, they were real sheep.
Remind us how old you were when you stopped believing in Santa Claus,
I was
Molly.
Almost 15 when I stopped believing in Santa Claus. I was 14 and I was 4 months away from being 15 years old. That's right.
But no, so you were talking about God giving us permission to do things, and this is actually, as far as I can remember off the top of my head, the final example of the evolutionary advantage of God,
mm-hmm.
which is, and this is where things get real ugly, as far as I'm concerned.
When God's in the mix, they often do.
is that God, like the thing that I read about it is that they did tests on three children, and they, not three children, but three groups of children, and the children had a ball with Velcro on it, and there was a target behind them that was on a Velcroed wall, and they had to throw the ball over their shoulder and try to hit the target.
Mm-hmm.
And you had, and which is obviously more or less impossible. And they had three groups of children. One group of children that was unsupervised. Another group of children with an adult. They were told they couldn't cheat. You could not mm-hmm. look around. You had to throw it over your shoulder. He had an unsupervised group of children. He had a group of children with an adult sitting in a chair in the room. And you had a group of children with no adults sitting in the chair in the room who'd been told that there was a magical girl called Alice who was invisible and who would be
wow.
in the room with them, watching them, making sure they didn't cheat.
Wow.
And the completely unsupervised children cheated.
Of course they did.
Hell.
Without a doubt.
And the rate of cheating between
actual adult and magical child girl?
The same.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Well, you know, and it's the same as if, that's why most stores' security cameras aren't recording anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
They
yeah.
are
They're
just,
prevention,
they
not
are
apprehension.
Just, yeah, they yeah. are just camera, they are nothing, there's no tape, there's nothing happening, they are just props that are there to make you feel like you're being watched so that you're less likely to steal.
If there is a tape, it's
being erased. I mean,
tapes aren't used
for
apprehension until someone's already been caught and arrested.
No, you can purchase cameras that are that are not cameras.
Yeah,
just a blinking red light.
Yep. Yep.
No doubt.
So essentially there's that control factor.
Right.
That
would be the
God provides the invisible supervision.
Social control, yeah.
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 Yeah. No doubt.
And that's where things get ugly on a moral level, which is...
Yeah,
which
and
is
an
that,
ethical level, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, there's the point. Out of all of these, there's the point where I myself am like, can we just fucking behave ourselves without an invisible superhero from outer space? Watching, can we just do that? Can we hack that? Can we put that together? Apparently we can't.
Was it immoral to tell the children that there was a magical invisible girl who was watching them? No. Was it unethical? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't immoral because it kept them from doing something that was wrong. But
well, I'd like to think they told the children there wasn't really Alice afterwards. I don't know.
I don't know, man.
But, still gonna go. But yeah. But
is it better they told them afterwards she wasn't real? Like, then they learn adults lie? I mean,
also, Santa Claus, not real.
Yeah. I know, Tim. God.
No. Sees you when you're sleeping, knows when you're awake and all that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
So the thing about that from an evolutionary advantage point of view that actually gives me pause is that it's evolutionary advantage. It's kind of evolutionary advantage in civilization. It's evolutionary advantage for the last 10,000 years. If you're, if you're with a bunch of people running around shooting arrows at buffalo, then you kind of you're gonna see everybody who might be supervising you pretty quick. You know, I mean, there's not a world. I mean, there's still capacity for theft and bad.
Yeah. Sure, yeah. Sure,
can be, but I feel like the necessity of the fake camera only really spikes once you start having governments and such.
Yeah.
And when instead you have a leader who you're looking in the eye.
Therefore, libertarianism.
No, it's not.
Ew.
Here we are. We got there.
You know, we're not. Yeah, this is. Yeah, we're no. I can say that government has more need for supervision without giving society to corporate CEOs. But anyway.
Yeah.
No doubt. That's the same damn thing. Right?
Well, Matt, we're going to move on to our five questions.
Oh, yeah, right. Sorry.
Yay, five questions.
No problem.
Right. That's amazing.
So, because it's your first time as a guest here, we have our usual five questions to ask you and get your answers.
If you come back, you get to write your own.
For us.
Wow, yeah. Okay.
Tim, do you want to start us off?
Oh, God, I can't wait. Hey, Matt, what conspiracy theory do you find most interesting or compelling?
This is super obvious to anyone who knows me very well, but I like the reptoids.
Oh, yeah. Oh, the reptoids.
There's this idea that there's these space aliens and they're reptilian, and therefore... evil, which of course is gibberish, but
right.
But there's evil reptilian space aliens who have infiltrated society, and they live in caves beneath the earth, and the British royal family.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
Is all
Obama was one. Hillary was one.
Reason, yeah, the only reason we know they're evil, by the way, is because they have green skin and not copper skin.
Yeah, that's really evil. That's super evil.
Green, red, white, or blue. Yeah, and I'm into dinosaurs and reptiles, and it's my whole thing. So you give me evil reptilians from outer space controlling. I mean, it's the most, it's possibly the most gibberish. I mean, it's worse than other conspiracy theories because other conspiracy theories, the evil is sort of implicit, whereas these are just devils from outer space.
Right. I mean, why are they here? Chaos.
Exactly.
They hate us.
It's so primitive.
They've been here since before us, but they hate us nonetheless.
Yeah. We're their cattle.
Yeah. It's so primitive.
It's super great.
from an ideological point of view, but it's still, it makes me laugh.
Yeah.
That's great. Question number two is, what is your perfect 2-week vacation? And physics is an obstacle.
But money is not.
2-week vacation. I assume that people do 1 week someplace, 1 week someplace else.
Sure, you can do that.
It's your vacation.
Where am I going? I'm gonna go chill out in Scotland for a while, for a week. I'm a terribly big fan of Scotland. I've been a couple of times, but need to go some more. I originally went just to go to see Loch Ness,
Did you see the monster? I mean, you're a monster guy.
Not. I'm a monster guy.
I've been to Loch Ness, and I did not see the monster.
Yeah, I know. Well, that's it for that then.
She's my favorite.
I looked so hard, but I love the countryside, and I love the people, and it's just my favorite place I've ever been.
The sheep in Scotland are visible, Molly.
I am so ready. My body is ready. Yes,
yeah.
I will look for Nessie while there are real sheep around.
We'll walk the wall like Melissa and see a billion sheep.
So I'll do a week. I'm going to go ahead and do a week in Scotland, and then I'm going to do a week in Japan, which I've never actually been to, but I really need to go, not only because I need to, see some Godzilla-related sites, but also Japan has a really... I do, in fact, do this. My actual vacations are largely structured around monsters and stuff because I am a... monomaniac, but there's also the Tengu and the Kappa, and there's an amazing bunch of mythological Japanese creatures with
all the Bakemono
Tanuki,
no doubt.
And I'd want to go see some sites based on those.
I would very much
have the sites, and there's a million.
I would love to see pictures of you in Japan because our listeners can't tell, but you are a gigantic man,
like Japanese people sitting on top of one another's shoulders to try and reach your height. Yeah.
All right, question three. What is a movie that changed your life?
Is it a movie or a book?
Movie or book, excuse me. What is a movie or book that changed your life?
A movie or a book that changed my life was actually a book called... And it changed my life. It changed my life a long time ago, and I've sort of developed away from it. But as far as an actual locus point, there's a book called Ishmael, which, it's fairly popular. It's about a little girl having a conversation with a telepathic gorilla, which is enough for me. But then the whole conversation, the conversation is about human society being made out of ideas and stories. Hmm. And everything we do is based on stories that were told. And at the time that I read that, that was a big thing for me. And I really started to think of humanity in terms of the stories that we tell each other.
It's a construct,
right. And
that's
how
you got hooked on Godzilla.
Precisely. And so I was very big into that. But as, frankly, everything I've said for the last 40 minutes will tell you, I've sort of moved away from that. I'm still very much into ideas and how they shape us.
Yeah.
But I'm increasingly, since then, kind of just moving over towards what is... inherent. And we have to be super careful about that because a lot of what is said about what is inherent to the human condition is political, is for some sort of means of control or mm-hmm. for some sort of agenda.
Problematic in one way or another.
Problematic in one way or the other, so be super careful about it. But the real simple stuff like pattern recognition or what have you, that is... that stuff is increasingly interesting to me and has nothing to do with ideas.
I just have to back up for a second and say that Hooked on Godzilla was my favorite K-Tel album from the 1980s.
It's funny because I was thinking like, oh, hell, he read Ishmael. Now he loves Godzilla.
That was improv.
Is it question number four?
It is question number four.
Is it my turn again?
It is your turn.
Oh, I'm excited. What is the geekiest thing you've done or said?
Come on.
I know.
I mean, you were responsible for one of the geekiest things I've done like a week ago.
Well, let's hear it.
Yeah. I dressed up on stage as the diva from The Fifth Element.
It was so good. And he lip synced.
He lip synced to Baby Got Back.
It was
Thank
so
you.
Great.
Oh, Fortuna and Baby Got Back.
There's just way too many of them. But the one I was going to say was that years and years ago, I had a website where I would do in depth, like, meta textual analyses of the old Godzilla movies.
And
I wrote an essay as part of this about Godzilla's symbolic relationship to the atomic bomb. And about a year after that, I'm reading an article in G-Fan magazine, which is the North American Godzilla magazine.
Yeah.
And somebody's written an article about Godzilla and the atomic bomb. And at the end of it, there are a series of sources. And this is somebody I've never heard of. I don't know who this guy is. It's a good article. I don't know who this guy is. But at the ending, there's a bunch of sources cited, and I was one of them.
That's such a cool way to find that out, too. Matt Kessin, I know that guy.
That's super nerdy.
That was super
That's
nerdy.
Great.
Awesome. Yeah.
And our last question is, what is your favorite hangover cure?
I'm actually a dude who can and usually remembers to just drink a shit ton of water before I go to bed.
Hey, that's a cure.
And I don't get a lot of hangovers.
We've been hearing that a lot. I think we get a lot of grown-ass adults who write into us, and therefore they're like, you just drink water before you go to bed and don't
Everybody
be an
knows
idiot.
That,
like,
right?
Yeah, like, just don't drink so much, stupid.
The
like, that's their hangover cure.
To not get a fucking hangover. Yeah.
It's kind of refreshing,
it's not
though.
Really a cure, yeah. But it's a prevention.
But for sure.
Yeah.
Cure, but,
it's refreshing that we're not... What we haven't been getting that we kind of thought we might get is like some witch's brew potion combinations.
Yeah,
from
raw
folks.
Egg with a dash
They're
of
like,
cane.
Oh, yeah. You gotta drink pickle juice through your nose.
I still
want
to get some of those answers. I'm really looking forward to a couple of those.
I do appreciate, though, that, you know, like you say, prevention isn't a cure, but prevention really is the best cure. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, yeah. That's excellent. Matt, you have Reverend Matt's Monster Science, which you post on Facebook and Instagram, and then there's a podcast that goes up sometimes for that, too.
MattsMonsterScience.com.
That's fantastic stuff. And you are going to be in Fearless Comedy Presents doing Monster Science on
September
23rd. And then you're in the Twin Cities Horror Fest.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I'm very excited about that.
Which is late October, early November. Go see Matt there. He's amazing, you guys. If you can put that together.
You want to see one of Matt's Monster Science presentations. They're really fantastic.
Yeah, they really are.
They're very funny and also oddly educational.
Oh, thank you.
But
they are literally oddly educational.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is very apt.
I'm all for that. Yeah.
Fantastic.
I learned more about Godzilla from watching one of Matt's presentations than I learned watching Godzilla movies.
Even better is when I'm like, ooh, red caps. I love red caps.
Yeah, fantastic. All right, thanks for being our guest, Matt.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
To all our listeners, you're listening to this early if you're throwing us a few bucks a month on Patreon. Thank you for doing that. If you're throwing us more than that, we got stickers and buttons coming on the way out to some more folks. Otherwise, everyone else, thank you so much for listening. Share us with a friend. Leave us a rating on iTunes. It's been a while since we've had a new one.
We only have like three answers to our five questions.
Yeah.
We definitely need more answers.
Yeah, if you want to send us your answers, if you're a Patreon patron, we'll bump your answers up to the top of the list.
Well, we only have three, so, you know, if you're not one, you have a really good shot at getting on soon.
That's right. Otherwise, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Nessie. Nessie.
Starring Tim Wick, Molly Glover, and special guest Matt Kessin.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time. You can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
We're geeks.
We're geeks without God.
We're geeks.
Geeks without God.
it's driving me nuts.